Senator Jay Boomer.
Man. Look at the sky. All the stars, man. The stars are beautiful tonight. Look at
the superstar. Star. That is what you are. What you are. Coming from afar. Reaching for the stars. Far away with me. To another place. When we lie on each other.
Lousy, most of your stuff is. You make violent films and make dirty films and you make family films, but just most of them aren't very good, are they? And welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. Last week we talked about The Candidate, and this week, due to another candidate in California connection, we will be discussing the 1998 movie starring and directed and written by Warren Beatty, Bullworth. And I'm Zach Brooks, and for the 225th time, I'm joined by
Your candidate for California State Senator again, Brendan Fitzpatrick.
Nice. Are you here to help me research a guy, Brendan?
I'm here to find a guy who knows a guy that can get you the guy.
All right, great. Well, once you get it, here's this envelope. Nothing in it. These are all veil references too.
We gotta cancel the weekend deal, dude.
Yeah. Yes. Well, we're going to start the weekday deal, which is our Movie Ladder podcast. So we're going to talk about Bullworth at the end of the episode. We'll decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent in by the listeners and us, your hosts. We'll be spoiling Bullworth, so if you haven't seen it did come out in 1998. It is about the 1996 election, and it's rentable.
It is rentable. I did. So this is funny. I had a $3 Amazon credit, so I paid a grand total of 63 cents for this film, and that felt very appropriate.
Oh, all right. Spoilers.
For the film that we watched. So okay. I was I got a discount.
Yeah, we will be spoiling Bullworth, as I said. So if you haven't seen it, and you don't want to be spoiled on, I don't know if there's really much to spoil. It's kind of more of a vibes movie than a plot movie. We will put the timestamp in the description of this podcast. It is clickable on some platforms to skip ahead. You're going to be watching next week for episode number 226. But as always, we suggest, well, maybe not as always, according to Brendan, but if you have 63 cents lying around, go watch the movie and then come back and listen to this discussion.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Shake that piggy bank, check under the couch cushions, maybe you'll get to watch Bullworth.
There we go. Surprising. It's always surprising when a movie like this, like a mid-90s kind of B-ish movie, isn't just like streaming randomly on Peacock or Max or something.
You would think it would be, but yeah.
I think this one opened with the 20th Century Fox fanfare, right? So this should be on Hulu then.
Yeah, or somewhere. Yeah, or at least like Canopy or something. Mm-hmm. This feels like something that would be buried on Canopy.
There we go. There's a Warren Beatty hive.
Yeah, that is true.
All right. Well, we're going to get all into it. I did tell you this before the podcast, Brendan, but I do have a movie on my list that I think would be like timely and fun to do. And I don't have a great connection between the two movies, except that I sort of connect the lead actor to Warren Beatty. They've never been in a movie together. They're just like similar type actors. So I think I'm going to this will be like a blind item. Like, I'll put it out there and maybe you can help me try to think of there's connections to it.
Is it Ned Beatty?
No. Are they related? I never can remember. They're not related.
Yes, correct. They are related. Yeah.
They are related. Oh,
yeah, they are related. Yeah.
No. I don't think Ned Beatty's in it, but I didn't think to check that. All right.
Warren Buffett.
Yeah, Warren Buffett. I can see Warren Buffett showing up in this movie.
I know. So many other people do.
All right. Well, we're going to talk all about it. And as always, submit your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, movieladder@gmail.com, movieladder on Letterboxd, and all of that. Brennan, what is the best thing you watched this week?
Yeah, I watched a movie, speaking of Canopy, on Canopy on Friday night. On my personal Movie Ladder, I was doing sort of a rock and roll movie thing where I watched different music movies that weren't necessarily documentaries, but were about music groups or music bands. And I stumbled on this movie that was from Sweden from 2013 called We Are the Best, directed by Lucas Moodysson. As soon as I was like 20 minutes into this film, I texted your brother and said, you need to find this movie because this is giving me strong Sing Street vibes, which okay. came out a couple years later. Mm-hmm. This is a coming of age movie about three young girls in Sweden who decide to form a punk band at their high school. They're mm-hmm. sort of ostracized and, you know, they're like the loners and the losers of their school. And they decide to be all rebellious and form a punk band, even though none of them know how to play any instruments except for the one person they recruit to join their band. And it's very much a similar vibe to
School of Rock-ish.
To Sing Street. Yeah. Not as ridiculous as School of Rock. Not quite as charming as Sing Street, but I thought that the performances of the three young leads were all fantastic. This movie's about 90 minutes long. I streamed it on Canopy, so you could probably get it from your local library. But yeah, just a really charming, delightful film about coming of age in Sweden and deciding to form a punk band. It was pretty cool. And the song that they come up with is incredibly catchy, but I don't want to spoil it.
Is it Ghetto Superstar?
So, no, it's not Ghetto Superstar. But yeah, I for 3 days I had the riff of the song that they come up with and practice over and over and over again stuck in my head. So yeah, I highly recommend people check out We Are the Best. I'll also shout out the Billy Joel concert 100th at Madison Square Garden, streaming on Paramount Plus. Watched that with my brother and my sister-in-law while I was over there on Saturday, watching the Deaf U, hanging out with him. It's a bummer. Like, I really enjoyed the concert itself, but it was so freaking short. Like, it was less than 90 minutes. It's like 80 minutes, and which means they had to have just butchered the set list of the actual live show.
Were there commercials
for TV? Yeah, there were commercials too.
Okay.
So it's a bummer. I really wish it was better lengthwise, but it was still a lot of fun to watch. So if people are, you know, wondering whether or not to check it out, it is streaming on Paramount Plus. And I mean, it's a good enough time if you're looking to burn, you know, 80 minutes or so on Paramount. So there you go. Cool. Billy Joel and We Are the Best.
Lots of music-themed things. Yeah, was exactly. We Are the Best on your personal movie ladder?
Yeah, it was on my personal movie ladder because I just watched One Love, the Bob Marley movie, which was not very good.
Okay, yeah. It doesn't look very good. You could do Flora and Sons next.
I've seen Flora and Son, yeah.
Oh, you have seen it. Okay, Flora and Son. Just the single Son. All right. Well, I've been not able to talk to you about the best thing I watched this week because I wanted to talk to you about it on the air. So I haven't mentioned this to you, which is weird because we mention everything to each other.
I know. I was like, I wonder like why he hasn't told me what he thought of this movie. So yeah, tell me something.
Yes. Well, I did rewatch some stuff this week that I did like, but the best thing I watched, it is, so you know how people like go to the theater and watch The Room and it's very fun to watch like a crazy movie in a group of people when you're all having some drinks, right? And it's like not a movie that is like would be fun to watch at all by yourself, but it's very fun
like,
to watch
like Mandy.
Yeah, like we were experiencing Mandy. So I had people over to watch this movie that I had heard mentioned about. Now, have you heard about Hundreds of Beavers, Brendan?
I have heard of it. I have no idea what the hell it is. Yes.
So the best way, and I've heard it described this way, is like basically it is like a live action Looney Tunes cartoon mixed with a silent film, like a Chaplin-esque silent film. It is about a man on the frontier and his battle against nature and against beavers and rabbits.
Incredible.
And trying to survive. It is very slapstick. It is like the people I had over were like, oh, this is a silent movie. Well, it's not really silent because like he makes like sounds. There's no words in it, but you hear him like scream or make grunt noises. Like there are the spit noises, like there are noises that you would not, you know, it's not a film you wouldn't get that at all. And I was trying.
I'm honestly shocked you got a group of people together to be able to watch something like that.
It was actually a guy on my soccer team. He was the one who suggested it to me.
Oh, wow.
And I had not heard about it until he mentioned it. And it was playing at the theater by us. We missed it. And so but it's rentable now. Nice. So I got it. You can just do like a free trial for Fandor. That's where I watched it.
Oh, cool.
This is one of those movies that once this hits like Peacock or Netflix, I think this is going to be a big hit. I think it'd be great if like theaters ran this. you know, like had midnight screenings of this, much like they do with The Room. And it's just, it's very fun. I think, you know, I'd be curious how it is, like, if you watched on your own, but why do that? Why not watch it with a group of friends, yeah. have some drinks, have people over? I don't know.
This it's feels like, this feels like one I might have to introduce to my brother and his girlfriend, Caitlin, when I'm down there in May at Myrtle Beach, after we come back from the boat on Saturday. Like, I might be like, hey, have y'all heard of this thing called Hundreds of Beavers?
Yeah.
And then, you know,
yeah.
fire no, it up. That,
yeah. Very fun like that. I think this is one I can see myself rewatching a lot. Like, it's just it's a good time. So, yeah, keep Hundreds of Beavers in mind. I hope that it hits one of the major streamers sometime soon. Very, like, just, like, really clever uses of, like, this, like, kind of fantasy-esque reality. Set design, costumes, you know, it's all like black and white. It feels like it's like, you know, paying homage to Looney Tunes, Chaplin movies, video games.
I am intrigued.
The video game logic is really interesting because it's like he's constantly interacting with like a guy who has like a shop. Like basically like when you go to somewhere and you have to like turn in your tokens for like an upgrade. Like there's
like a
that
video game, yeah.
Yeah. Like very much like a video game. So and the creators of this, the star of this, like none of them have ever been in anything really, so to speak of. So, pretty fun debut effort.
Cool.
Yeah. So, this was one after I watched it, I was like, you and I could like watch this sometime. We were hanging out. I think we'd have fun.
Yeah. That sounds fun. So,
yeah. All right. Well, shall we go back to another election?
Hundreds of Bulworths.
Hundreds of senators.
Yeah. Hundreds of senators.
Yeah.
There are hundreds.
I do think, speaking of hundreds of senators, I do think I have a very good title connection for this. I
have one too, but I can, we can save it until we get there.
Yeah, we'll see. Mine, I think it'll take you on a little bit of a journey, but when I thought of it.
Oh, no.
Well, speaking of journeys, so we are spending time with Senator he's currently a senator and he is
current California senator running for re-election for the Democratic nomination.
Jay Billington Bulworth,
which is a ridiculous name.
Why is it one L in Bulworth? Bulworth, not two L's.
It should definitely be two L's. It's very confusing to only be one L, but what can you do?
Yeah. Because he's a bull, right? He's like a bull in a china shop here.
He is literally a bull worth of china shop, yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, basically we have this senatorial candidate who is so beaten down by the system that he is suicidal. He's working with the insurance companies. He has a life insurance policy. He takes out a hit on himself. And then somewhere along
California
the way.
California for a campaign.
while he's out campaigning. And then his eyes are opened. And realizes he doesn't want to die, and he starts getting a following because he tells it like it is.
Right. Yeah. Very much like last week. Yeah, somebody who starts mouthing off from the hip, like it doesn't matter, and straight talk, I believe, is what they call it when you campaign like this. You say the things that aren't supposed to be said about the political system and what's really going on, and that's, you know, it's the straight talk.
Yeah. The difference is that that Bulworth says it in rap lyrics. Very bad, very bad, very white rap. Well, I said very bad. Actually, I think like some of his rhymes
are actually really good.
Very clever. Yeah, the delivery is the problem more than anything.
Yeah, the one where he's in the he's doing the big speech before the what do you call it? The lobbyists. The lobbyists and the insurance companies and the union, the Hollywood people. That rap was actually half decent. So here's the thing. We got to get this out of the way. I mean, this is two white guys talking about basically what is a cultural appropriation storyline of this film. And there's a phrase that came out very recently after the Black Lives Matter movement that I've heard a lot, especially from, you know, a podcast that we are like really big fans of, the Midnight Boys. Something that Van Lathan often says when criticizing culture and how it's represented by white filmmakers: "My culture is not your costume." And this film very much feels like it's trying to make a statement but the person trying to make it, I'm not sure he actually believes in the things that he's saying.
Now, do you mean Warren Beatty or do you mean
Warren Beatty? Yeah, okay. Warren Beatty and Bulwark, period. Mm-hmm. He's just trying to be subversive for subversiveness sake. Mm-hmm. Because some of the plot of this movie takes leaps and bounds of logic for it to make any sense, especially the romantic subplot that ends in his would-be killer in Halle Berry somehow falling in love with this jackass.
Yeah.
And going away with him in the end.
And I struggle a lot.
I struggled a lot with that.
With that aspect of it, right? Where it's like, he is basically, he is becoming like the song that became famous from this, and I am annoyed that this song is not in this movie except like 20 seconds over the credits at the end, is the song Ghetto Superstar, which became like a big radio hit. And like that is basically what Boatworth becomes, right? He becomes like, he's in inner city LA,
right,
and he's staying with is her name Nina? Is that Halle Berry's character? Yeah, Nina's family. And he's also like appealing to people who are underrepresented by the Hollywood or by the Washington system and by the Hollywood system.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. By the system. Yeah.
And so like, and you know, from what I've read, like Warren Beatty is a pretty liberal guy the things that are expressed in this are actual political frustrations he has and wishes were said. And, so like, I appreciate the like attempt to get that message out there. I think much like what you brought up, that like we're two white guys talking about this movie that's, you know, about like black appropriation by this character. Yeah. It's also like there is not a black writer on the crew.
Exactly. And that's part of my problem with it. Yeah.
There is. I think we're Victoria the casting Thomas. Director. Yeah. Victoria Thomas is a producer and casting director, and she's a black woman. And it's like, I think that if this movie was doing that while also commenting on the aspect of cultural appropriation, I think it would make more sense. I just don't know if this movie really is making any kind of commentary on that besides just being like a silly comedy.
Right. And I mean, I will say that there are aspects of it that were handled pretty well. Like, it would have been really easy to have somebody on his staff be like a absolute out and out like racist who says something awful.
Yeah.
And they lean away from that, which I think is great.
Yeah, like, they don't really comment on race at all in this movie.
No, like,
they
don't. It would have been really easy to make the Oliver Platt character uncomfortable because he's racist, rather than just being uncomfortable because he's freaking out because his candidate is going off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Oliver Platt performance in this film is really, really solid. As he's the disgruntled chief of staff of Senator Woolworth, and I think he's really, really good in this. But I think that part of the problem is it touches on the issues that it wants people to talk about, but it doesn't feel like it commits to a way to solve them or having an actual dialogue about them. It brings up brutality against youths in Compton, and we have the two white cops who have the ice cream confrontation with the group of young kids. But it doesn't, instead of solving it in any actual way, it's played for a comedic moment. And then at the end of it, and white saviorism, because he comes running in to save these kids from the cops and tell the, and like make the cops say they're sorry. It wants to touch on the fact that people in this climate of the 1990s and young African-American men and women were being forced to work low-paying, no-paying jobs or turn to crime in order to help their family. That's the entire point of the Halle Berry character being his assassin, is that she takes the job to pay off her brother's debt that he owes to this gangster played by Don Cheadle. That's the only reason she takes the job. Go ahead.
And I think, like, too, with that, you know, a couple of things that were in mind. Like, one is the, you know, I was thinking a lot about the Rodney King riots, right? Those were 1992. So that is six years before this movie
came out.
But also 4 years before this movie takes place. I think it is an interesting choice for this movie to come out in 1998, but be placed in 1996.
Right, because the movie is commenting on OJ, which had only happened a year or two prior.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Throughout the film. Like, yeah.
Yeah, there are references to OJ as well, which, you know, very timely for us to, you know, we were talking about Capricorn 1. We didn't pick Capricorn 1 a couple weeks ago when OJ died. We did this movie just comment on OJ. Yeah, I don't think this movie is all bad. I think, like,
so, I don't think it's all bad.
There is some fun stuff. Like, I laughed a little bit.
I laughed a lot in the first 45-50 minutes of this movie. Yeah. I laughed a lot.
And I like the premise of a senator who, I mean, you could poke holes and like, well, you're going to take out a life insurance scam and then get killed immediately. Like, that probably is going to pay off. But
yeah,
like, I like that as a like, oh, I took out a hit on myself. And now I've decided I actually want to live. I don't want this to happen. And like the accidental candidate that we had last week that we're getting that once again too.
For sure.
So I don't think this movie is all bad, but it just like it had like an ickiness to it. And I feel like there was another movie earlier this year or maybe last year that I talked about that had like that kind of same, like, I just felt like icky watching it. And there's like some ickiness and prickliness to this for me.
Yeah. And I think that's intentional. I think that a good comparison to this film, and I don't think it'll come up as a connection later, is you take a film like this and the things it's trying to say and the things it does with African-American culture and race and how those two worlds collide in the world of a lead character who's trying to, you know, lead a different life. And then you look at a film like American Fiction by Cora Jefferson and that came out earlier this year with a, you know, 99% African-American cast, written by an African-American, produced by African-American. And it's dealing with a lot of the same cultural appropriation subject matter, except that it's doing it much better at the comedy side of it. You know what I mean?
That's actually a really interesting connection to this movie, because that has a whole aspect of like being being this outspoken character and then like the accidental success that you have.
Pretending to be a gangster.
Yeah, I think the other thing this movie does that's kind of like, I think whenever it could really delve into racial issues beyond the surface level, it just kind of like uses the Warren Beatty being goofy rapping as like a crutch.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it just kind of like, in his rapping, like, again, like we said, like I thought like the lines were actually like pretty clever, and obviously him delivering it is like incredibly awkward, intentionally so.
Right.
You know, it's also trying
people
to,
are like, mesmerized by it. And that's the weird thing for me, is that like the African-American community that we see in this film is galvanized and mesmerized by this guy talking like this. Mm-hmm. And that felt kind of icky and nonsensical to me, that 100% of the people watching it would be moved by this guy.
Well, I think this movie is like clearly a fantasy, right? The fact that we get the guy, like the guy at the end, I think he's credited as like Rastafarian, like the older man with the beard.
Right.
That we get him kind of breaking the fourth wall during this movie, and he's always in these spots. He's sort of like a guardian angel in this. I think that makes it more of a fairy tale. This makes it kind of
He's like very much a Clarence type figure. It also really reminded me of there was a movie you and I watched last year for Criterion that I can't remember the name of. I think it was a Melvin Van Peebles movie, right? Where it's about these two angels who are set down, or two demons who are set down to a party in New York in an apartment in order to cause trouble.
Yeah, a movie I really liked, and I'm blanking
on. And I can't remember the name of it.
Don't Play Us Cheap.
Yes, Don't Play Us Cheap. It was so good.
Yeah, great movie. And great musical as well.
Yeah, and that character reminded me a lot of the demon characters in that character, in that film. Yeah,
that's a good comparison too.
There's a lot of movies of the 60s and 70s era that play on this, you know, both the magical Negro tropes as well as the political absurdity, because and subversiveness. And, you know, I'm thinking a lot about the films of two people that I've watched documentaries on in the last couple of years, Haskell Wexler and Robert Downey Sr., both made this sort of subversive political statement movie in the late 60s and 70s. And this movie really feels like it belongs in that era,
mm-hmm.
with those type of films. And it's trying to play it in the 90s, and it just doesn't quite work for 1996.
Yeah. What I like about it taking place in 1996, now, mm-hmm. it's only 2 years before the movie came out, but for us, watching it now, 30 years later, almost 30 years later, is like, there's just like element of that time period. You know, I talked a little bit about Rodney King and OJ, but also, you know, and I was too young to know too much about it, but like the Crime Bill of 94, I know was a really big thing.
Yeah,
and
Clinton's like the Crime Bill was a huge thing. Yeah.
And like tying to present times. I mean, tying into present times, like Joe Biden was very big on that Crime Bill when that came out in 94. And you know, that we have this, like, even the way that we open, right? That we open about the Democrat incumbent president running unopposed, Bill Clinton, versus Bob Dole, who
Clinton and Dole exist in this film as political figures. So, I mean, they are the president and runner-up of you know, the film.
That's what it's saying at the beginning, that we have that title card. And I was just thinking about, like, this year's presidential election, although, you know, it said that, like, you know, nobody was excited for either candidate. And I think, like, you get attention to that this year, too. Do think, like, there's probably, like, a more rabid fan base for Trump than there was for Bob Dole, I would imagine. Right. But
one of the other things that you have to think about is that in 94, Bill Clinton, despite all of his scandals, was still one of the most popular presidents in modern history. And a lot of that had to do with the support he had from the African-American community. And one of the reasons that Clinton had that was because he claimed to be such a great friend to the African-American community when he was running in 92. He, you know, a lot of the sorts of rallies that Bullworth ends up doing in this are photo ops that literally Clinton did in California in the early 90s.
Well, and that's a good connection to last week, right? Yeah. That we have things kind of ripped from the headlines like we did last week, where we identified, you know, the Nixon parts of it and the Kennedy parts of it that were pulled in the candidate. I think also, like, just the way that people talk, especially in the beginning of the movie, the way that the characters are talking about welfare and affirmative action and, like, the demeaning ways that they talk about the whole myth of the welfare queen, right, was around this time.
We had that, like, as well with the candidate last week, where he's spitting off about, like, what he really thinks, like, wants to say about those communities.
And, so I think like it's an interesting time capsule of the way people were talking at the time. And I mean, I don't think. While I think that it's surface level on some of the things about race, this is saying, like, the only part that outwardly felt off to me was just how many of the black characters in this were, like, quote unquote gangster characters, right? Like,
exactly.
Especially that middle scene where we're getting, like, oh, you don't want to go walk out in the, you don't want to walk out of the house right now. Like, that stuff all, like, felt like just like,
that
isn't how it would be handled, like, in 2024. Right. And again, this movie wasn't made in 2024. This movie was made in 1998. So it's got to keep that context in it. But we do have the Wendell Pierce character, who's one of the TV producers who's kind of following them around.
Yeah. And a lot of the time that I think he has my favorite reaction shots in the entire film, because every time they cut to him, he's smirking or rolling his eyes or giving, like, the, I don't know about this, like, look on his face, where he is the face of skepticism, and I'm bummed that he doesn't also have the voice of skepticism about Bullworth.
Yeah, they're kind of the, the Statler and Waldorf.
Statler and Waldorf, or Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Where they're watching everything through the camera, through the TV.
Yep.
And they're commenting on it. Him and was it Laurie Metcalf? Is that the other?
Yeah, it's Laurie Metcalf, who's fantastic. I love Laurie Metcalf. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing that annoys me about this movie a lot is, for whatever reason, the way it's credited is in alphabetical order,
and it takes forever to try to find people. Yes. I was trying to find Jack Warden because I was trying to figure out who his, like, personal aid guy was, and I was like, I know who that is. I know who that is, and it took me forever to realize it's Jack Warden, who we saw in All the President's Men last year, and he's, like, a big fat guy. He's been to a bunch of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, no, I think, I'm looking, I don't have a ton of notes, but like we do get the two different churches, right? That we get we get the black church and we get the black gospel church and we get the white Catholic church and we see the differences between them. And I think like this movie with almost just like another pass at the script or something where it could have really like
it needed a punch up writer. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Where it's if it was commenting a little bit more on like the cultural appropriation, like the 2024 version of this movie would look more like American Fiction.
I think so.
It would be about this guy and pointing out like the hypocrisy, right? That in like in our society and the way that culture is appropriated. And instead he's just kind of like using these things.
He gets away with it. Yeah.
Yeah. And
the he's using the culture as his costume.
That's a good phrase for it, I guess. I did like the ab crunch, just like we see it on, we see some TV commercials, and I had forgotten all about ab crunches, and I was just that was such a time capsule. That took me back to like the ab, you know, the thing you lay on and you put your hands on the top and you do your ab crunches.
Yeah. One last thing I wanted to hit on with some of the characters and the development and the writing, just to, we mentioned Don Cheadle is in this film. Don Cheadle plays a gangster, quote unquote, who basically runs the neighborhood that Halle Berry's character and her family live in, and they owe him money for some debt that never is explored or explained that her brother owes him. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, because of the interference of Bulworth, again, the white savior thing, Cheadle is going to forgive the debt and make her brother work it off. And again, this is like all surface level writing. Like, we never find out how much money he owes, why he owes it, what happened between them, why he's such a like prick. All he needs are the words on the TV of Jay Bulworth to suddenly turn him into a good person.
I think that's the fantasy
like, that
of this
feels icky. Like, disingenuous.
Disingenuous is a good word. I give some of that stuff a pass because I feel like this is supposed to be farcical and like, it's not meant to be a serious film. This is a comedy.
Right.
And I think, the humor doesn't necessarily land. The humor doesn't necessarily age well. But I do think some of the things that they're saying age well. And
I agree.
What I was thinking so much to last week, and, you know, we talked a lot about the candidate, like, during the debate, the issue of abortion came up. And that, like, stopped – when I was watching it, like, stopped me in my tracks. I had to pause the movie. I just couldn't believe that 50 years later we're still having the same debates about abortion and also about, you know, pollution, environmental, and climate change that we were having during the candidate. And in this, a lot of the political commentary, in addition to things about race and welfare and affirmative action – also, there's a lot of discussion in this movie about the insurance companies, single-payer healthcare.
Yep.
And I wish I knew, like, when...
The insurance stuff that he mentions is all really great. Yeah.
Yeah, and all still relevant now, where all we still are struggling with, you know, expensive and, you know, inaccessible healthcare. I mean, it's gotten better than it was in the 90s, but it's still... It is still largely a broken system, and a system I'm really passionate about that I think is very broken.
I agree.
And the things that he talks about, I wish that I knew when some of the insurance, reconfiguring happened, because I know there was...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is due to Obamacare in the early 2000s.
There was stuff in the 90s. In the 90s before Obamacare, too. During the Clinton administration, there was some Medicare reform, I think is the word I was looking for. And also class, right? That we get some lines at the end of the movie about the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting, and I think he even says it in a rap almost to the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Like, he's like it is coming from like a court jester-ish character. And, you know, maybe there's something there that like delivering it from somebody who's more accessible and more like goofy and clownish, was able to appeal to people, to the average person that's not just like your standard politician.
Well, and to your point, I mean, there's a you know, sort of a parallel between Warren Beatty choosing to make this film and then somebody like Damon Lindelof making the version of The Watchmen he made a couple of years ago. Like, if I'm choosing to start that series, by showing the Tulsa Massacre. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, no. So if nobody else is going to tell this story, is it better that I not tell it so that it stays hidden? Or is it better that at least I tell it so that people know about it and bring mm-hmm. awareness to it? So there's a lot of like back and forth discussion to be had when a white filmmaker chooses to amplify a hurtful part of Black history or Black culture for the sake of their storytelling or filmmaking. And it's like, well, is it better if I didn't do this at all? Or is it better to do it, because then at least there's more exposure around the conversation for it? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think also if the Bulworth character would have wrestled with the things that he had done wrong as part of the political system, like, he never really wrestles with the fact that, like, besides the fact that he's depressed and suicidal.
Right.
But we don't even really know
why. We didn't even talk about the mental health struggle that he's having throughout this film. Like, he has a full-on mental health crisis. And, I mean, that's another aspect of our society today that has gotten better, but was really bad and stigmatized in the 90s, was, like, anyone going through a mental health crisis.
Yeah, we've only, he doesn't really... Mm, he never really, like, no. At least that I caught, like, it's that part is never explored either. It's just sort of like, where it's accepted that, like, oh, like, he just wants to be killed. He wants to be assassinated.
Yeah. And then, like, he goes to sleep in the Holly Berry family's house for 2 days and wakes up and just walks out in this, like, fugue state where he's, like, thanking everyone for letting him stay. But I'm not even sure if he, like, knows how long he was there, why he was there, what he did. He doesn't seem to know what he did before he woke up at the end of this film.
Well, it's sort of Sleeping Beauty-esque when he wakes up, I feel like. Where he wakes up and then he's won.
Or Wizard of Oz.
He's won the primary, and he's also been written in to run for president. And he is now candidate for president as well.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too, like, looking at Warren Beatty is obviously, like, most well known as an actor, but he has directed
he has the Best Picture Oscar for Reds. I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's written Shampoo, which we've done on this podcast, Bulworth, uh-huh. and a couple other movies. And then he directed Dick Tracy, which we did on this podcast as well. You know, so we've dabbled in the Warren Beatty.
We have.
And as well as movies that he starred in. I think, like, this movie compared to Shampoo, also, we talked about Shampoo last
There's
week.
There's a lot of Shampoo in this.
With the candidate. But, yeah, like, that we're getting things right around election time. That was Nixon. You know, so I think, like, there's some connective tissue between the candidate, Bulworth, and Shampoo.
Jack Warden was also in Shampoo.
Yeah. I think Jack Warden's in a number of movies with Warren Beatty. I think they must work together. Let's see. I'm trying to think if I have... I mean, I feel like, in general, like, this was kind of a breezy comedy, though. It did go pretty quick. I liked Oliver Platt when he was on coke, the scene where he's on coke, and he's...
And he's, like, forcing Josh Molina to do coke, too. And it's so funny. Yeah.
Where do I recognize Josh Molina from? Because I'm like, that guy looks so familiar.
West Wing and other sitcoms.
Yeah, see, I haven't watched
it. But he also kind of looks like the guy from Two and a Half Men, but it's not.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. This movie does have, like, a great, like, just an incredible cast.
Yeah, I love, like, the cast is deep because, like, Paul Sorvino shows up as the insurance investor. Sorvino. Yeah, mm-hmm. With Spring of Sorvino, it's back, baby.
Yeah,
and then so this was the other part is at the end of the film, Bulworth gets shot as he's leaving the Holly Berry house, and it's implied that the person that shot him was the Paul Sorvino lobbyist.
Yeah, that's what I took from it.
And it's like, well, wait a second. So you're telling me that this lobbyist was actually a gun carrying... I mean, I guess I could buy it. A gun carrying middle-aged lobbyist who decides to shoot Jay Bulworth in the middle of the street after he gives his latest speech. Like, it didn't...
Because he's you know, crossing the line about, like, you know, this movie is about the insurance company and how, like, these lobbyists and these major corporations are basically funding and owning all of these politicians, and he's speaking out against them. And so the only way to stop him and to silence him
is to kill him.
That he's no longer part of the machine, so he needs to be killed. I do like the way that the insurance stuff is also plugged in, where, like, the scam that he is running is that he took out an insurance
policy on himself.
On himself. Right. But that's like, that kind of pops up like 30, 40 minutes into this movie. You don't realize it when they're setting up the beginning of this movie, when he's talking about quote unquote researching a guy. What did you think of the misdirect that the killer was the photographer?
That's the main thing I remembered from this movie, was the guy with the glasses who turns out to be a photographer and not the assassin. But I had forgotten that it was actually Halle Berry, and I was like, why is Halle Berry doing in this film? Like, why is she in this film at this time? And I'm like waiting for it. And then I was like, oh yeah, that's right. And then it right before she reveals herself to be the assassin, I remembered that she was the assassin. And that I actually like, because it gives more depth to her character. But then it undercuts it at the end by having her go with him. I think that it plays better for me if her entire motivation and storyline begins and ends with her trying to provide for her family.
Yeah.
Not falling in love with Jay Woolworth at the end.
Well, also because she's like half his age, right?
Right.
Like,
well, and at least they mentioned that. At least they address that.
But true. Okay. Still. Yeah, but I don't know if they really they address it. I don't know if they comment on it. Yeah. But yeah, so we do get Summer Sorvino. We did have Mira Sorvino. I think it was it?
Is that Quiz Show? Summers ago?
No. Well, we just had her a couple episodes ago in Quiz Show.
Yeah, you're right.
It was a couple years ago that we had the Summer Sorvino. We're kind of dancing around them once again. That family, we can't escape.
Sorvino fans, every time we try to get out, they come.
Yeah, we also, we also get Oliver Platt, who we mentioned. We get Halle Berry. We get Don Cheadle. Yep. Christine Bransky.
Yep. Bransky is his estranged wife. William Baldwin shows up at the end of the movie as her lover.
Is that the first time we see him?
Yeah, it's the only time we see him.
Yeah.
So there's lots of like little cameos, like William Baldwin, Michael Clark Duncan, right before he broke out and got famous, is one of the bouncers.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the film.
I had seen that in the credits that he was in this movie, but then when I saw him, I was like, I definitely recognized him. I thought that William Baldwin stuff was kind of confusing because he looked a lot like the guy that Woolworth debated.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was trying to figure out who the guy between. This was my big question for you. Were you able to figure out who the actor is that played the guy that he had the debate with?
No.
Because I couldn't find his name in the credits. And I was like, I feel like I know who that guy is. And I think he might be a real politician.
Well, he looked like Ron DeSantis to me. I don't think it was Ron DeSantis.
There is a DeSantis credited in the cast.
Is there really?
Yeah, there is, but it's not Ron DeSantis. So I wonder if it's that same guy. Let me find it. Stanley DeSantis.
Stanley, he plays Manny Leibovitz.
That's right. No, that's definitely not right. That's not right. Looking at the picture now. No. That's an older guy.
Yeah. Interesting. This guy popped up in Boogie Nights and The Aviator. So we have this three-timers club for Stanley DeSantis on this podcast.
Yep. But I could not figure out who the actor was that was playing his debate opponent for the primary.
That's why I thought it was the guy at the end, and then I realized that was Billy Baldwin at the end of the movie. So yeah, I mean, I think like I was very impressed with the cast. I think this is a movie that, you know, I feel like I was 97, 98 was when I was really like first getting into movies. So I do remember when this came out. Of course, I remember the song. I mean, I think everybody knows the song. Speaking of the music real quick, so it annoyed me. I kept waiting for Ghetto Superstar to play. I even watched the entire credits because I wanted to hear Ghetto Superstar, and we really get second or third song in the credits, in the closing credits, and we get it for like 20 seconds.
Interesting.
And what did you think of Morricone doing the score of this?
It's very funny that Morricone did the score for this. That's definitely like a Warren Beatty called it a favor.
Yeah, and it's really, I think, like, we only get it at the end when, right before he gets shot, we get that sweeping, like, it almost sounds like it's the score of Once Upon a Time in the West. But, yeah, it's, I think, only the second time we've had a Morricone score on this podcast, but, of course, he does, tremendous music. We had him in Once Upon a Time in the West, and that's it for movies and this one that we've done. Although, movie on my list, he did compose a score for movie on my list. I did not realize just now.
We did I really liked the part where he first gets to the nightclub and the nightclub owners are debating about which celebrity he is, and they call first they think he's Clint Eastwood, and then they think he's George Hamilton. And you actually see George Hamilton later in the film at the party he goes to. He's in the background. So he gets mistaken for George Hamilton, and then George Hamilton is in the film later.
Oh, that's
which
funny.
Which is very funny. Yeah.
We mentioned this last week, too, that this movie is assistant directed by Frank Capra III.
Yes.
So a nice tie back to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, which Frank Capra I did that movie.
Yep.
But also Frank Capra III was an assistant director on National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And what I was thinking a lot about before I even saw that was I feel like the end of this movie, when everybody's in the house and we're getting all these different characters from throughout the movie, it reminded me a lot of the end of Christmas Vacation or
the end of It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life as well. Yeah. But he was now an assistant director on that one.
Yep.
So, all right. Anything else that you want to touch on before we get to feedback and all that good stuff?
No, I think that's the main stuff. Let me check my notes here. I think that's
Did you like seeing a youngish Larry King pop up in this movie?
Oh, yeah. I forgot that I was going to mention the cameos. Yeah. There's so many cameos and real people in this movie. Larry King popping up was very funny. I liked it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Murph. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think of like Warren Beatty's performance outside of the rapping?
I admire his commitment to it for like three quarters of it. And then at the end, I just felt like he kind of fell apart once he wakes up. It didn't make his performance at the very end of the movie didn't make a lot of sense for me for the movie we had just watched.
Yeah, there are aspects. I was watching this movie kind of late last night. And so sometimes it led me to be like, am I really tired or am I not catching these things?
Right.
But I do think there's just like random stuff that happens and like either isn't paid off or isn't set up well.
Yeah, I really like the beginning when he's first having his performance in the beginning when he's first having his mental breakdown and he's not eating and he's not sleeping and he's got like the whole pizza in front of him and everybody's like, have you eaten? He's like, no, I'm not hungry. It's like all of that is good. And then when he's doing like the run walk through the airport when they first land in California, all that's very funny.
Yeah.
Like very good, very
good
funny.
Physical stuff.
We didn't even mention Sean Astin is the freaking cameraman for C-SPAN.
I kept expecting Sean Astin to play a bigger role in this movie because it was Sean
Astin. No, he's just there in the background. Samwise Gamgee.
Yeah, Rudy. Yeah. Rudy himself.
Yep.
So, all right. Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of connections that we can touch on, but first, we'll get into feedback. And before we do that, we get into Box Office Mojo. So, this opened as a Memorial Day release. Interesting. Ooh. Memorial Day of 1998. And it opened at number 5. So kind of landed with a little bit of a thud.
Yeah.
I would be curious. I don't have it in front of me. I don't feel like looking it up. If when the song came out, when the song started playing on the radio versus when the movie came out. Like, did the song come out first? Because I feel like if the song was a hit, maybe the movie would have done better. But if it was like it came out after, you know, if the soundtrack came out after and then became a hit after, maybe that wouldn't help so much in the box office.
Gotcha. But, yeah, maybe.
Speaking, there's some good connections to things that we've talked about on this podcast already. So this movie came out the same weekend as Almost Heroes, which is a random movie that I feel comes up on this podcast a lot and came up on pretty good a lot.
Well, we talked about it a few weeks ago because it was still in the box office, I feel like, when we when we watched something else from this summer.
But, let's see. Something else from 1980. What else have we done from Truman Show.
Yeah, that's what it was, Truman Show. Almost Heroes was still in the box office when Truman Show came
out. Was it Truman Show or was there another one from 98?
I think it was Truman.
Connection to another movie that's on my list. I did not realize that. Interesting. I will have to adjust my list. All right. Other things in the box office. Titanic, we still got in the box office. It is week number 24. It is at number 9.
Crazy.
And following right behind it... oh, never mind. I was thinking this was a movie we did. We have not done Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I was confusing with Leaving Las Vegas when I saw that.
Fear and Loathing is not a bad connection.
Interesting. another movie that opened the same weekend as the third week of release of Bullworth. Sorry, that I'm looking at. It went to the third week of release.
Because the first 2 weeks were so small, it was two theaters.
Yeah, for 2 weeks. Well, in the third week, so all of this is about the third week. Third week of Bullworth, it was the week Insomnia opened.
Yes, which we've done.
Yes. Is that the same Insomnia? Did Insomnia? No, that is the original Insomnia.
Oh, the original. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't think Insomnia came out in 1998. Yeah, the original Insomnia.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah.
We also have Primary Colors in the box office at number 16. So another also kind of very similar. Yeah. Another good connection. And Godzilla was number one in the box office this week.
For sure.
The Godzilla movie with like the big
Matthew Broderick. Yeah.
Yes, Matthew Broderick.
The big pile of fish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Fish. Yeah. No, so just looking at the week this movie actually came out, yeah, there's not much of note. We have Titanic at number six the week before this came out. I have to readjust because it opened wide Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, it opened wide Memorial Day weekend. Okay. I could have phrased that better. Yeah.
I was getting confused by Box Office Mojo listing at number three. Okay, lots of confusion on the podcast. Anyways, there's never any confusion when we go to the listener feedback. Of course, this was listeners are not in any kind of order because this was my suggestion last week. So this was a point for me off of the candidate.
Huzzah. All right.
Alex O kicks us off, and Alex O says, "So I mostly hated this. I get its central message about how there is no representation for poor people and for Black and other minority groups. But what a stupid way to get there. And of course, it had the ending that the candidate wisely stayed away from, the very obvious assassination." Spoilers for the candidate. "I'm embarrassed for everyone. Warren Beatty got to be involved with this. One bright spot was John McLaughlin voiceover at the end, as well as seeing Oliver Platt, Halle Berry, Don Cheadle, and friend of A.B. Sutton, Josh Molina." Okay. Now I know who Josh Molina is. Josh Molina blocked A.B. Sutton, who is a 32 fans patron, and recently unblocked
for West Wing, for tweeting about West Wing or what?
It was something innocuous. I don't remember the full story, but Jason Stitt tweeted at Josh Molina and begged him to unblock A.B. Sutton as a birthday present, and he did unblock A.B. Sutton. That is why Josh Molina seems so funny. Oh, now it all makes sense.
That's really funny.
Anyway, Alex O finishes and he says, "But overall, this was just a mess. 1.5 out of 5.
Fair enough, man. I can definitely see how all of Alex's points. I think some of the comedy actually works pretty well. It's a matter of taste, a matter of subjectivity.
It's the thing we always say about satire. Like, satire is very hard to nail.
Satire is very hard to do, with Barbie.
I think this movie was attempting satire. I just think, sometimes when it didn't nail it, it came off as just, taking advantage instead of making a commentary. Yeah, there we go.
Travis writes in, it says, "A completely ridiculous concept, but I did enjoy my time watching this movie. This movie screams coming out in the 90s.
You did not overall, that.
Overall, nothing remarkable, but a fun watch. 3.5 stars. Yeah, this does feel like a very 90s movie that is very much of the time it came out that you couldn't make it the same way now.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, I agree with you that it's very much it would have to be closer to what American Fiction pulls off.
Yeah, that's great. That's a very good connection.
Yeah.
Robbie says this was pretty entertaining. It added a lot to not knowing exactly why he was going through this breakdown, but also confusing as to why it was all happening. Yeah, see, it wasn't just me. Good that Robbie agrees. The assassination plot of himself was the part that I enjoyed the least about this. It felt like it was just there to add tension and drama around him potentially dying at any moment. But it was pretty easy to guess that he would make it all the way through at least 95% of the movie. And then it happened in the final seconds. 3 out of 5 stars.
Right.
Do you think he dies at the end of the movie?
I mean, they show the, the narrator guy, the ghost guy, the outside of Cedar Sinai, which indicates that he's alive. He's just in the hospital. Okay.
Because he says that he's not a ghost. He's a spirit, I think, is the line.
Right, exactly. The movie. Yeah. Is that a martyr?
I think he is a martyr. I think he does die at the end, and his spirit lives on. I think it's a better. It is a better message. It's a more cynical message, but it's a better message if he dies. And it's you can't escape this machine.
I think so too. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's finish off with Ron, who says, "Well, it started out good with the politicians' funding side. They fall into the racial side." Didn't age well. 2 stars for Ron.
It didn't. And it's always hard, I feel like, to talk about this stuff from a 2024 lens when it came out 30 years ago. It's
I agree.
You know, we've changed, we've progressed, and I think the way I try to think about it is like, well, there are, it is good that we have progressed past this stuff. And I think like we should, you know, good to be able to talk about it and compare it to the way we talk about things now. I think,
but a lot of the issues are still issues. We've just found better ways to talk about them.
Yes. Which is, you know, which is depressing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, yeah. Some of the, I mean, much like we talked about last week, a lot of the issues are still issues and still there. We just have found different ways to talk about them or yell about them or protest.
Or ignore them. Yeah.
Or ignore them. Yes. Yeah. Or ignore them. So it's going to be a 2.5 overall from the listeners. Okay.
Lower on the listener side than normal.
Yeah, this is shockingly our lowest rated listener average this year by a wide margin.
Mm-hmm.
So
cool. All right, you want to go first?
I will. I'm slightly higher than the listeners. I understand, you know, the criticisms. I agree with some of them. Overall, I think that the strength of this cast lifts it up, and especially some of the humor that does hit in the beginning half of the film hits really, really well. You know, points for trying.
Mm-hmm.
Parts of the plot really didn't work for me, but overall, I still, like, had a good time. So I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm right there with you. Sorry, do you have something else that I mean to cut?
No, I'm good. Yeah. Okay. So you're also going to do a 3?
I'm a 3. No, I think it's like, I think there were moments of this were pretty enjoyable. I think like it is not a bad movie. It is not, for me, it is not like an offensive movie. Right. Even if it isn't handled all that carefully at times. And you know, I think that's okay. I think like, I don't necessarily think issues always have to be handled super deftly. I mean, I just think like there could have been some more thought behind it, which is a problem I have with other movies I've seen recently. I think like it's, you know, like there are some funny things. Like I did laugh at his rapping. Like it is so ridiculous and stupid, and like it's so slow. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Eminem a little bit watching this movie.
Eight Mile
is on my list. And like, like this was just right before, I think, like, when did My Name Is come out? I think that was probably 98.
Slim Shady LP was 97, right?
Let's see. My Name Is.
Slim Shady LP 97?
Eminem, My Name Is, came out 99. Okay.
Okay, so it was a year earlier. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. So this is before Eminem. But yeah, I think like this, you know, I was thinking about Eminem, but Eminem's a much better rapper than Warren Beatty. Gotcha. But like, also, I wish I could have had the transcript of what he was rapping about, because I do think like he had good, his bars were good. So yeah, I don't know. And I find Warren Beatty incredibly charismatic. I really, really like him on screen. And I'm a Dick Tracy I love. Shampoo was one of like the great surprises early on of this podcast. If you haven't seen Shampoo, I think it's a really good one to revisit. And we do have a podcast way back in the archives that you can listen to. Oh, this is gonna be fun. Hero of the movie. I don't know.
I'm gonna give it to the casting directors, Victoria Thomas and G.M. McCarthy. Because I do think that this movie is incredibly, incredibly well cast.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So there you go.
Cool. I am going to give it to Praz, featuring Old Dirty Bastard and Maya, because Ghetto Superstar is a fantastic song, and that is what it is. And that is definitely the lasting legacy of Bulworth more than anything else. That and the like very strange poster art. with the like Bulworth in the beanie. Like coming out of
jumping
the
out of his own mouth. That's very funny.
I think like I feel like Chris Rock has remade a lot of Warren Beatty movies. He did the Heaven to Wait, but I feel like Head of State was also either a remake of Warren Beatty or remake of somebody's film. But like I could see a Chris Rock version of Bulworth where it's like, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that, but I was just thinking about different things that popped in my head when I was watching this movie.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, connections. So before we get to title connection, what else do you, so we have the California senator, the political machine, the debate. The political
machine in California, the debate. Yeah. The televised debate, everything going wrong with the televised debate, the mechanical difficulties. What else did we have?
We had the TV interview as well as the debate, which is like the TV interview that they went to in Canada, that was sponsored.
And we had the stump, we had them, you know, specifically using the African American community for a political ad or moment in both films. Yep.
I do think, like, there's, you know, Robert Redford, Warren Beatty, both like that, like the classic Hollywood leading
man. Classic 70s. Yeah. Yeah. They're both of the same era too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, I think there's, and then of course we had one that ends with an assassination and one that doesn't end with an assassination.
Indeed.
Yep. But assassination kind of forefront for both of us in both movies.
For sure. Yeah. So,
and
he has a picture of Robert F. Kennedy on his wall in his office. And I talked a lot about last week how the McCoy reminded me of RFK in the candidate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. I didn't pick up on that. That's good.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, what is your title connection, Brendan?
A worthy candidate.
A worthy candidate. Okay. That's a worthy title connection. All right. So mine.
What did you have?
All right.
Take me on the journey.
You know the song by Tupac, California Love?
Yes.
Okay. I was actually wondering if you knew California Love. I was not sure if you would know this song.
California Love.
Yeah. Okay. So we have California Love, right?
Knows how to party.
This is a movie about a California election,
okay,
right? Rap, because he is a rapper.
Okay.
So my title connection is California Gov, small g, because he's not
like
running
it
for governor.
Yeah.
So it's California GOV.
I like it.
Yes. Also, GOV, get out the vote as well. Could work for that as well. So yes, California Gov. Nice.
California knows how to govern.
Yeah. When I thought of that, I hurt myself.
I like it.
Myself thinking of that last night. So
that's very funny.
All right. Connections to other movies from this year.
Obviously, we have Cheadle playing a gun-toting gangster, as we saw in Devil in a Blue Dress. We have everything in California. They mentioned the water supply yet again, and the environment in Bullworth, as well as, you know, Chinatown and this, and all of the conspiracies, political conspiracy in Devil in a Blue Dress as well, because it's a politician, right? It's the mayor who has the issue.
Of course, release date, this came out just a few weeks before Truman Show.
Good point.
Going back to the beginning of TV month, that I feel like we're still sort of in TV month,
sort
I feel
of,
like.
Yeah.
Dancing around it. I also wrote down Jack Warden, but I don't know if Jack Warden was in anything this year. I don't think he was. I don't know.
Not this year, but was he not in Chinatown?
No, he was not.
No.
This is our third time with Jack Warden. We had him in All the President's Men as Shampoo as well.
Yes. Great guy.
I do feel like the satire, you know, kind of connects to Poor Things and Barbie a little bit.
For sure. And we have everything with the TV, with Pleasantville and Truman and Quisho. Mm-hmm. And
I think that's about it for this year. I did want to call out Paul Sorvino. Welcome to the Five Timers Club.
Yes, I was going to ask you, is Paul Sorvino in the club yet?
Yes, he is.
I did have that.
He, Goodfellas, Romeo and Juliet, Dick Tracy, Rocketeer. Rocketeer is the one I always forget he's in.
Yeah, it's great because he's the gangster of Rocketeer, too. Yeah.
Yes, Eddie Valentine in Rocketeer.
Yes.
That's who he plays.
Yeah.
So, and one other thing I did want to, I can also point out other times when this movie's come up. So obviously The Candidate last week was my suggestion.
Yep.
Parallax View, another one with Warren
Beatty.
I suggested
Warren Beatty, California political
off Parallax View. Oh, I also suggested Capricorn 1. So it's like second time Capricorn 1 has come up. You suggested Bobby off of Parallax View.
Of course I did.
So we were repeating
someday
ourselves.
We're going to watch Bobby.
Sometime. And then I suggested this off of Shampoo, Election and Jack Warden, along with Warren Beatty. Also, I suggested this off of Dick Tracy. So, this has been a movie I've been wanting to watch. I've been wanting to scratch this Bullworth itch for a long time.
Bull itch.
Yes. And movie map.
Other than All the President's Men, I didn't really see anything that struck a nerve. What about you?
Oh, I'm looking through it right now. I did not prepare a movie map.
Yeah, I didn't really give it a close look, but
Maybe American Psycho, like the dark humor. Wolf in sheep's clothing, or I guess
it is
sheep in wolf's clothing. Yeah,
American Psycho is a comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So that's satirical. Maybe The Wizard of Oz waking up at the end.
Yeah, that's very
Titanic
true.
Being in the box office at the same time. So,
All right.
One last thing.
Do I have one last thing? Did I write anything down? No. No, I didn't. Okay. No, I'm good. Yeah.
We didn't talk about it, but Bulworth was nominated. It was nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
My God.
Yes.
Okay.
Academy.
Academy.
Yeah. I don't have who let's see. I'm trying to I should have been more prepared. Yes, it was nominated for Best Original Screenplay as I pull this up, along with The Truman Show. So we've hit two of the best screenplays, original screenplays. Both lost to Shakespeare and Love at the Oscars that year.
It did win the Los Angeles Film Critics Association Award for Best Original Screenplay. So
yeah, this movie
that's
has
the only
like,
one that it did win.
This movie has like generally like decent reviews, both at the time. You know, I think it's, I think like at the time, it has a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.1 average rating.
Yeah.
The Washington Post rated this film 19th on its list of the 34 best political movies ever made.
That's the thing is that the ratings on Letterboxd even are also like, even the more recent ones are pretty decent or forgiving. So, I mean, maybe it's like, you know, I don't know. Maybe it does work and we're just being too hard on it, but.
Possibly. I think like this, I think my, like what I've come to over this discussion with you is that like, I really think this movie needed a little bit more introspection than it had.
Yeah, I agree.
And I also, I had heard from Alex O about how he felt about this movie before I saw it. And so my bar was significantly lowered when I started this movie, and I was like, oh, it's not that bad.
Like, to get 3 is decent for something that you had a bad taste going in. So, and you hadn't seen this before, right? This was a first watch for you?
Yes, this is the first time I've seen it.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. All right. Well, shall we find out what we're going to be watching next week for episode number 226?
Absolutely, let's do it.
All right. Once we do pick that movie for next week, send in your feedback at Letter Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieletter@gmail.com. And let us know what you think we should watch the following week. Also, your feedback, connections, all this fun stuff. Alexo kicks us off and says, a palate cleanser after this one, also featuring Halle Berry, Cloud Atlas.
Yep.
One of my Tom Hanks blind spots would be
Cloud Atlas. Mine too. I've not seen the Cloud Atlas.
Joe Braga always makes fun of me. He says, how can you call yourself a Tom Hanks fan and you haven't seen all of his movies? I said, if I finish all of his movies, there's nothing left. That's it.
Fair enough.
We're at the end. A man can suddenly find the truth around him. They live. Oh, can suddenly see the truth around him.
Sees the truth around him, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's, I like that.
They live, yeah. And I think that takes place in LA, too.
Yeah, I believe so. Very much time period, too. Late 80s. And another film to add to the latter political month, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yep.
So, Grandpa Capra could be our title connection.
Grandpa.
Yeah, yep. Senator Capra. For next week, I would suggest another movie written, directed, and acted by Beatty with political themes. Oh, this is Travis, by the way. Directed, and acted by Beatty with political themes, Reds.
Nice.
Yes. I've heard about Reds. I don't really know anything about it.
Yep, there you go. I've never seen it. I know it's very, very long. It's like 4
hours. Maybe it's about Russia with that name, but I don't know.
Not sure.
Robbie says, Ocean's 11, Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle supporting performance, yep.
Ron says, The Machinist. Wow. Sleep is needed.
Yeah, that's very true. He has no sleep. Yeah.
Bob Roberts, a movie that came up last week, Unconventional Absolutely. Political Campaign. And Thank You for Smoking, Politics versus Special Interest Groups.
Yep.
And my brother Aaron, he said, have you done Shampoo? Yep.
We have.
Done Shampoo. Good news, bad news. And then he said, how about Parallax View? I said, we've done Parallax View.
Does he even listen to this podcast? The answer is no.
And then he said, how about Bonnie and Clyde? I said, yep, that's fine. He said, yep, anything with Beatty is good.
All right, there you
with
go.
With bated breath, maybe we can say.
With bated breath, I like that.
Yeah. And Jim, getting in under the
wire.
I
have a title connection, too. It could be Bonnie and Crime.
Bonnie and Crime, oh, all right.
Yeah. Good. Even though Fade Down Away is Bonnie, not Warren Beatty, but, you know.
True. Beatty and Crime.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Jim, I see Jim got in under the wire with his suggestion.
Just one suggestion,
Only a suggestion. All right. And his
He did not watch it this week,
Okay. Rudy. Well, maybe he'll watch it at some point. I would be curious Jim's opinion of Bulworth. I feel like, having heard about what Jim thinks of Civil War, I would be curious about what Jim thinks of Bulworth, just because of the...
Is Civil War going to come up this week? People have to keep listening and find out.
Oh, maybe. All right. Cool. Yeah, Rudy is his suggestion for Sean Astin and a single name title connection.
There you go. Rudy.
Rudy is offsides. We can answer that debate once.
Rudy is offsides.
All right. Rudy has entered the transfer portal.
Rudy has an NIL deal with
whatever studio made Rudy.
Yeah, right. All right. I've got a few political films to throw in there. First one I'm going to do is a Chris Cooper as the titular candidate in Silver City.
Never heard of that.
Nope.
Sounds very boomery.
Let's see. What else do we want to do? Kevin Kline is the titular political person in Dave.
I think there's some actors who are in both.
Yep.
This. I think Josh Malina.
I think so too. Yeah. Steve Carell is the titular candidate in Irresistible.
The Jon Stewart movie. I have that on my watch list.
Yes. And then a few non-specifically political. This is the one I said that I was a little outside the box, but I thought would be funny. All right. Especially considering the assassination at the end. The Courage election year.
I did see that listed somewhere. And I think I've seen the first Purge.
I haven't seen election year. I've seen the first one.
That would be a funny one to do this year, considering it's election year.
Yeah. Let's see. That was on there. How about someone who's already been elected to office, but like this movie also influenced The West Wing and has West Wing connections, the American president?
I think Josh Malina might also be in that. I think Josh Malina is in a lot of the, what's his face?
No, but he is in The West Wing.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he's not in the American president?
Nope. And then how about a political assassination? This one from the POV of the Secret Service in The Line of Fire.
Had that?
We had a Clint Eastwood mention. He gets mistaken for Clint Eastwood when he walks into the bar. Let's watch a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yes, I had that on my list. Josh Malina is in The Line of Fire, as well as Morricone did the score for In the Line of Fire. That was
there
the one
you go. I thought that might be the one I was going to steal from you.
Yep. All right,
those are my six. Yep. What do you got? Cool.
All right. This one came up last week. We have another football movie already on the list, but how about Heaven Can Wait?
Yep.
Warren Beatty plays for the Rams and dies and then comes back. Like, you know, he's not a ghost, but a spirit, whatever that line is.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Got
to be a spirit, not a ghost.
Baranski in a fraudulent fake production, Bowfinger.
Nice.
Eddie Murphy.
Also takes place in L.A.
Yep. The Laker girls as well.
Steve
Martin.
Bowfinger.
Yeah.
Love Steve Martin.
Yep.
Eat your briefcase.
We've got Halle Berry in this one.
Yes.
We've got Deadpool and Wolverine coming out soon. We could revisit the original X-Men. Maybe we could convince one of our nerdy friends to join us to talk about
it. I mean, we have to call Kevin Mahadeo. I mean,
Kevin or Rich also.
Could Rich, yeah.
Yep.
They're currently podcasting about X-Men 97 over at Screen Impact.
X-Men 97 is in the news as well. I also, the other connection I will say is Professor X in that movie is a leader of men, a leader of young people, which politicians, you know.
He's also trying to give voice to the oppressed. Mutants are a good, parallel for marginalized communities.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I have that one. My next one is The Stuff. So this is a movie. I think this is kind of like They Live. It's like an 80s movie about capitalism. It does have Paul Sorvino in it. So we get him into the Six Timers Club if we did this. It's one that's been on my list. I don't know. I think it's like a. It's, I don't know. Maybe you've seen it. I haven't seen it.
I've never heard of it.
All right. There is a line, if you're looking to be out of sight, I've got The Place. Out of Sight also stars Don Cheadle. And my last one, this is the one that I need a little help with.
Okay.
Brennan, do you know what's going on this week?
Passover.
Yes, correct. I feel like we talk about Warren Beatty and Robert Redford. I always, in my mind, associate Warren Beatty and Charlton Heston. Charlton Heston, in a movie, plays a leader of men, much like Professor X, leading them out of Egypt for 40 days and 40 nights. That is the 10 spoilers for the second half of the Ten Commandments.
Spoilers for the Ten Commandments. Moses parts the Red Sea. Spoiler alert.
The Red Seas?
Yeah, exactly.
I also thought if you want something that's not quite as long as the Ten Commandments, this one came out in 1998. That is The Prince of Egypt. So choose your Passover story. choose your Moses story. I've never seen that. I mean, I've seen like bits of the Ten Commandments, but I've never sat down and watched the Ten Commandments.
I've never sat down and watched it end to end either. I've seen it in passing in Passover flipping channels around Easter. You know,
I was at the Seder last night and was thinking about the Ten Commandments. So I was like, I should suggest the Ten Commandments.
You should. Good job, everybody. Let's take it from the top.
I guess I didn't need as much help connecting the Ten Commandments as I thought.
No, I got you. Yeah.
All right.
Cloud Atlas. They Live. Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Reds. Ocean's 11. The Machinist. Bob Roberts. Thank You for Smoking. Bonnie and Clyde. Rudy. Silver City. Dave. Irresistible. The Purge Election Year. The American President, In the Line of Fire, Heaven Can Wait, Bowfinger, X-Men, The Stuff, Out of Sight, The Ten Commandments. Zach, you can't get to go first. I would say from your suggestions here, you want to not continue primary month.
Oh, I guess I didn't do much. I didn't do much political stuff, did I?
No, you didn't. I mean,
yeah, no, I didn't really have any political stuff on my list.
There is a there is a senator that's very prominent in X-Men, so I take him back.
Oh, right. Yeah, and an assassination plotline.
Yep. But that's not the first X-Men. So.
Yes, it is.
The one with Hugh Jackman?
Yeah.
Is it?
Where he's on the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, right, it is. Yeah.
They're
trying
to kill him.
Right.
Spoilers for the first
X-Men. Spoilers from X-Men 2000. Yes.
Well... I have never seen Cloud Atlas. Maybe it's time to knock a Tom Hanks movie off my list. It is a Wachowski movie as well. It is six nestled stories spanning time between the 19th century and a distant post-apocalyptic future, is what it says.
Nice.
I don't know. Could be.
Well, I do have I do have a plan if we want to continue political primary month. So I'm going to pick Bob Roberts just to have our next primary candidate on the board.
Wasn't the problem with Bob Roberts that it's like impossible to find, and that was why we didn't.
Oh, was that the problem why we didn't do it last week?
I think that it's not even rentable, and that was why we didn't do it.
Oh, was that why we didn't do it last week? Yeah, double check that real quick. Because if it's not, then I'll do Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Yeah, nope, not rentable.
Okay, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington as my political candidate.
I'm gonna have to try to find it, but yeah.
Yep. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and then yeah, you're right. Bob Roberts is not. Yeah. I think it might have been on YouTube, but we didn't want to do that again after the candidate. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. So for my list, what are you going to do?
All right. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Cloud Atlas. From your list, Silver City, Dave, Irresistible, The Purge Election Year, American President, In the Line of Fire. In the Line of Fire, I have to pick. That was on my list as well. I think that's like a very good connection to this. There's lots of cast and crew connections.
Yep.
I've seen it relatively recently, I feel like, but
I haven't. Yeah. I haven't seen it very recently, not since the 90s.
Go back 5 years before. Yep. I don't remember when was Clint Eastwood mentioned in
when he walks into the club with Holly Berry and her friends from the church, the bartender mistakes him for Clint Eastwood. Then the bar manager comes over and says, "That's not Clint Eastwood, that's George Hamilton."
All right, we'll grab that line. That could be our title connection if we do that.
So there you go.
We also get like an unhinged John Malkovich performance in the Line of Fire.
Spoiler alert. All right, I'm going to go with X-Men because we talked about it. X-Men are in the zeitgeist right now.
They are.
X-Men 97 is huge. To me, my X-Men. Yeah.
Yes. We get Halle Berry.
Yep. Get Halle Berry. We get a senator. Our final four are Cloud Atlas, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, In the Line of Fire, and X-Men.
Cool. Do you want to guess where Cloud Atlas is streaming? It is streaming somewhere.
Disney Plus.
Close. Paramount Plus.
Gotcha.
As well as Fubo.
Fubo.
Well. Yep. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is rentable, not streaming anywhere.
Okay.
In the Line of Fire is... it's on Tubi. I won't make you guess that one.
Okay.
Also AMC Plus, if you have that.
And the big question is X-Men finally on Disney Plus now that Fox is owned by Disney? Did they move the X-Men movies to Disney Plus yet?
What do you think?
Yes.
That would be awesome if they didn't have X-Men on Disney Plus right now. They have X-Men cartoons on Disney Plus. They have an X-Men movie coming out in a few weeks. Like, I mean, as much as like some of like I am intrigued by Cloud Atlas, I would like to revisit In the Line of Fire. I just watched Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. So as good as the connection of that is, I don't want to have to rent that. And like I just watched it.
I think it'd be really fun to try to find connections between this movie and X-Men.
I think we've already found a bunch.
I think it's gonna be fun. We can
is next week the penultimate episode of X-Men 97? Or do we have a couple?
No, it's the anti-penultimate. There's 10 episodes.
So I think we have a lot of potential people we could call to guest on this.
Absolutely,
My memory of X-Men, to spoil, I'm fine with doing X-Men.
I love it. I'm here for it.
It gets us, gets us a little bit closer to Deadpool and Wolverine. We get to see, like, where were superhero movies in 2000 versus
now. Yeah.
Versus now, how different are things. But my memory, and I haven't seen X-Men in a few years. At least since I've been logging movies on Letterboxd. When I saw X-Men in the theater, I remember being really disappointed because I felt like it was so short. And I thought there was so much they could have done. So,
And people were really upset about the costumes, too. That's the main thing I remember.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. All
right, we can talk about it.
Hopefully
we can get Kevin or Rich.
Never mind. I'm going to save it for my one last thing. Nope. All right. I will not bring it up now. Because I am currently reading MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios by Joanna Robinson. By next week, I might be finished with that book. So.
Cool. I'm currently reading Dune. I do not think I will be done with it by next week, but I am flying by. I am flying through it pretty quickly. It's good.
Nice.
There is some. The director of X-Men did do another movie that would be pretty interesting to follow it up with.
Yeah. Don't scroll down too far because I don't want you to spoil my one last thing for next week.
I won't. X-Men 2000 directed by Redacted, we'll just say.
All right. So, X-Men. Very excited for X-Men. Very excited for the Shogun finale tonight. Going to make dinner and watch that as soon as we
have it. Yeah, I probably will watch it too.
So, Shogun.
Yeah, I thought the penultimate Shogun was very good. I've come around on that show. I was up and down with it. If I had unlimited time, I would start the series over again because I do think, like, now knowing where it's gone, I would get a lot more out of it.
There's still a lot of the plot I still don't quite know how we got there. Like, there's a lot of maybe it'll all come together in the finale. I don't know.
Maybe you'll rewatch it. Maybe you'll revisit it. So, is that your thing you're most looking forward to watching this
week? Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. For me, I don't know. What am I most looking forward to watching? I was not prepared for this question, even though we do it every week.
Usually you're the one pressuring me.
I mean, like, X-Men 97, it'll be fun to watch it with now, like, an added layer that we're talking about the X-Men movie.
The Amazing Nightcrawler.
Yeah. I need to watch In the Mouth of Madness for my monthly challenge.
Dude, that movie's so effed up. I love that
That's
movie.
What I've heard. Well, I have to watch a movie about a book, and it seems that movie's about also,
it's either that or Evil Dead.
Yeah, I do also really. I've heard a lot about this Late Night with the Devil movie that just got into Shudder.
Yeah.
I might try to watch that once it gets dark out tonight.
All right, cool.
And we're both going to be watching X-Men. So, what do they say? Is it X-Men Unite?
To me, my X-Men.
To me, that's not from this movie. That's from X-Men 97.
Yeah.
Get your claws out and don't touch anybody if you're rogue.
Exactly.
Keep your sunglasses on.
Does it hurt every time?
Don't become the Phoenix.
Please don't become the Phoenix.
Oh, what is Nobody, it? What
the, we are not the watching about? Dark Phoenix, for fuck's sake.
Oh, man. Yeah. What is the line about what happens to a toad when they get struck by lightning?
The same thing that happens to everything else. Dear God. Joss Whedon punched up that script.
Oh, all right. Is that your one last thing?
No, it's not.
All right. Well, Well, worth reviews. I was going to go through some. We do have one from, not really friend, but like he's in the universe of this podcast, Phil, okay. Phil T, the other Phil T from RJP, not
yeah,
Phil T, the rapper.
Yeah.
Great Phil Thompson. He says, LOL, am I glad this movie exists? 100%. I think we need way more movies that are bold and confident with what they're trying to do like this. Do you think Warren Beatty accurately and successfully captured 90s black culture? LMAO. Not mad at this movie. It's very silly, a tad out of touch, and doesn't really quite work all the time, but fuck it. What an idea for a movie. And it did make me laugh sometimes and think, IDK. I wouldn't really recommend this to anyone unless they're specifically looking for this type of goofy American political satire. If I were anyone else and I had made this movie, I would be way more embarrassed, but IDK, Beatty has the swagger to come out from this kind of thing unscathed. The 90s, what a time.
Awesome. Shout out to the Grateful Thompson. That's a good review.
A good review. I think that captures. True has a 3.5 star. Their review is just Biden.
I mean, as you mentioned,
I don't know if Biden could pull. I was thinking a little bit about Biden and the corn pop story when I was watching.
Yeah, I was too.
Lots of actually like 3 and 4 star reviews on. Manizalak. Come on now. Let me hear that dirty word. Socialism. A couple people have that one.
That's good.